We start our second hour. Welcome back. Nice to have you here. My name is Jim Rome. We are live in Southern California. Man, there are more fires in the area. This is a scary thing. I got to say, here in Southern California, the wind is crazy. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I mention that because that is a new development and we are watching. It's so funny, Hawk. The town's burning down. You got this big grin on your face. Yeah, I know. 1-800-636-8686. I've got Joe Moglia coming up in hour number three. He is the chairman of Coastal Carolina Athletics. That's still ahead. ATP is still ahead. Your phone call is still ahead. But as promised, we are joined right now by somebody who covers boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports. Again, the first sports writer to be honored as outstanding journalist by the Nevada Press Association. He is a very good friend of the program. And I thought there was an amazing, amazing fight on Fight Island, so I had to get him back in to talk about it. He is Kevin Ioli. Kevin, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. How are you doing?
Good, good. All right, so Kevin, take me back to before Saturday. You had spoke with Habib in the build-up to that fight. At that time, how would you describe his mood, and just where was he at that point in his life?
Obviously, you know, when I spoke to him, everybody was trying to get him to talk about his father, and so they were directly asking him, hey, how does it feel not having your father there? And I realized that wasn't the way to go. You know, it kind of had to go in the back door and talk about it. And so, you know, I got him to talk about his father, and it was very obvious that, you know, his father's loss had affected him deeply. And he said, I started training camp in Russia. I didn't know what I was doing. And that is amazing for a guy that I had as the pound-for-pound best in the world before this. A lot of people had best or number two, saying, I didn't know what I was doing as I started training camp. A remarkable admission when you really think about it for a fighter of that level. But his father had meant so much to him and had led him, you know, so directly that, you know, I'm not surprised, you know, when you know the relationship they had, not surprised to hear the way he, you know, he spoke.
In fact, can you, Kevin, kind of finish that thought? I'm not sure that everybody truly understands the nature of that relationship, the relationship that he had with his father. How much did he mean to him, and how would you describe that relationship?
Well, you know, his father started him in MMA as a young boy. You know, there's the famous video of him wrestling the bear. And I wrote in my column today, you know, he started wrestling a bear, and then he ended fighting a bear of a man in Justin Gaethje. But his father was like his best friend. He was his mentor. He was his coach. Obviously served as that father figure. The relationship was very deep. And it went just beyond, you know, everybody loves their father, but it went beyond just the typical relationship to where everything he did in his life he consulted with his father on. And so it was a very deep and very passionate relationship that the two of them had. And when his father got COVID early in the spring, and you know, had some ups and downs to it, and he finally ended up having a stroke as a result of complications from the COVID. And Habib, really, you saw, just, you know, he struggled to deal with it. And even at one point, you know, when Dana White was tweeting about the UFC coming back, Habib was kind of pushing back on it, saying, hey, this COVID is serious, because he was looking at his whole world was going away in front of him. And you know, you just had a feel for him because you knew that this was not your typical relationship, father and son, which thankfully I had a great relationship with my dad, and most people do. This one really was second level, and it was something else.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. So, Kevin, when you look at the fight itself, obviously when you think about Habib, you think about how great he is as a grappler. But his coach, Javier Mendez, was talking about his striking ability. Then you have that first round where Habib is willing to trade with Justin Gaethje. How impressed were you with his striking on Saturday?
I thought it was fantastic. I mean, you know, you're talking about Gaethje. He's 22-2 going into that fight with 21 finishes. I mean, it was just incredible, all with his hands, and just a tremendous striker. And now here's Habib literally walking him down. And Gaethje landed a couple of shots, but I thought Habib gave better than he took in the first round. Gaethje had some kicks, which Mendez told me afterwards that he was a little bit concerned about, that they didn't expect Gaethje to kick as much as he did, and that the kicks were effective on Habib. But, you know, as you saw Habib, you know, moving forward, he had no regard. I mean, and that showed the epitome of confidence, because most people don't want to walk right at Justin Gaethje because of the tremendous power he has. And Habib knew that he was good enough as a striker that he could do that, closed the gap that he had to get closed to be able to take him down. And I thought the striking was fantastic. And I think if he would have decided to continue on in the sport, he might have.
Kevin, I think you're so right. Like, you don't want to walk right at Gaethje because he is so dangerous. But that's exactly what he did. But then Khabib, he puts so much pressure on the opposition when he does that. He takes Gaethje down in the first round, but there was not enough time left in the round to finish the submission. But then in the second round, he takes him down again. I thought, Kevin, even for Khabib, I thought it was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen when he applied that triangle hold. What was going through your head when you saw him get that?
I was stunned at it. Almost like Gaethje was almost understanding of what was going to happen, right? You know, it was like, you know, I thought Justin looked at it and said, I can't beat this guy, and sort of, you know, submitted before he even tapped. You know, it's like he realized, you know, he was in with somebody superior. And, you know, it was just phenomenal the way Khabib did it. I thought he would have gotten, if he had 20 more seconds in the first round, he would have gotten that arm bar, and the fight would have ended late in the first round. And then the triangle, he chokes him unconscious. Just remarkable grappling and remarkable work by, you know, one of the greatest fighters we're ever going to see.
All right, so a lot happened after the submission that we'll get to in a second, but what about that performance overall? Where does that rank for Khabib in your mind among his best?
I think he got it surpasses even his win over Conor, because Justin was an All-American wrestler. Conor, that was the weakness that Conor had and still has, is that he doesn't have that, you know, base where he's easier to take down than a lot of other guys. That wasn't the case with Justin Gaethje. You know, he had a high takedown defense going in. He was an All-American wrestler at Northern Colorado. He was a guy that, you know, you looked at the stylistic matchup and you said, there's a lot of things that would go in Justin's favor here. You know, he had the power, he had the wrestling to keep it on his feet. You know, all those things were working, and Khabib does it. So I think that surpasses his win over Conor McGregor and is the best that he's ever done.
We are talking to Kevin Ioli. So, Kevin, what kind of thoughts did you have as you watched Khabib in the moments after the submission and then during the interview in the cage?
You know, it's almost like you get emotional because you know these people for a long time, and you know what it means, and this is like the saddest thing. You know, you think of, you know, the closest person in his life passes away, and here he is on public display, and all the, you know, he bottled up that emotion so much before the fight. You know, he didn't want to let it out and show any sign of weakness, and now all the emotion comes out. And I thought it was interesting at first, you didn't see any of his team go to him as he got in the center of the cage. They all stayed back and they respected him and gave him room, and it was Justin Gaethje who actually went over and gave him comfort. And Justin said, your father would be proud of you. That was what he said when he put his hand on Khabib's back as Khabib was on all fours in the center of the cage. And it was really emotional. I've covered these things for a long time, and they always tell you don't fall in love with the fighters, and I don't. I've learned that, but you know, it was hard not to be emotional seeing what Khabib was going through.
I agree with you, Kevin. Watching that from my living room, I thought that was a very, very moving moment. I thought that was very emotional. And if you know the sport, like obviously like you do, but you know when a fighter takes off his gloves, yeah, and leaves them there, you know what that means. Now, you've seen plenty of fighters in MMA and boxing both announce that they're going to retire only to come back sometime later. Do you think there's any chance of that happening in this case, or was that the official ending?
I think that was it. I really do. I think that because of the relationship that Khabib had with his father, that he just can't do it. And he said in the cage, you know, my mother begged me not to fight. I promised her I would do this. And I think, you know, that he is a man of conviction. And, you know, he said he would never fight in Nevada again after what happened in the Conor McGregor fight. He stood to that, did not come back here and fight, said he wouldn't fight Conor McGregor again. He stood with that. Here he is now saying this. I believe it. I think that, you know, he's a man that stands by what he believes in, and he believes that he's accomplished what he wanted to do. He's done, and without father there, he's going to walk away. I think we've seen the last of him as an active fighter. Javier Mendez told me he's going to train with him at AKA, train other fighters, so we'll see him as a coach, but we're done watching him as a fighter, I believe.
All right, so if that, in fact, is the case, and that's the end of his career, what will you remember most about his career?
I will remember, Jim, that he fought everybody, that the people that he didn't fight, he tried to fight, and that he was constantly getting better. From his first fight, he was tremendous. You know, he was a A-minus on his first fight, and his last fight he was A++. He couldn't get any better than he was on Saturday night. And I think you remember that even though he was the best fighter in the world, he was still seeking to get better and improve, and that tells you the kind of attitude that he had toward the sport.
Not only that, but to see the reaction of his peers and to see what other great, great fighters had to say about him. I mean, they're all in awe of him. It was like him and everybody else. And then, Kevin, you've got this notion of the emotional pain that he had to deal with, as if that weren't challenging enough. But then we come to find out that he was injured during camp, didn't really tell anybody, and then on top of that, he had the mumps.
Yeah.
So from your conversations with Javier Mendez, just how tough of a camp was that?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. There was guys in his camp that had bronchitis. So there was a staph infection that was going around, so you had to be really careful about that, because a staph infection will take you right out of the fight. You know, he breaks his toe where he's having trouble walking. And he's in a sport where, you know what, foot stomps are legal. You know, he knows that, you know, Gaethje's liable, they're on the cage. And one of the ways Gaethje might have worked, you know, they never really got along the cage, but he had to think, you know, they're clinched on the cage. Gaethje might foot stomp them to try to, you know, use it as a way to get out of the clinch that they were in. I mean, he knew that that was going to be a problem. Then you I don't know how an adult gets mumps, but he had mumps, and it's like you're looking at it going, how does this guy do all this? He had mumps, Jim, September 11th he got it, so it was 2 weeks. So think about that. He's ready to go September 25th. He starts to train again. A couple days after he starts to train, he breaks his toe. He has to take another week off. It's close to the fight. He's in early October at this point. It was remarkable what he was able to do.
Now, I think it tells you all you need to know about the guy and his mindset, that he could go through all of that and then show up the way he did and perform the way he did. Kevin Ioli joining me for a few more moments. So Kevin, I thought it was really interesting what Gaethje said after the fight. He said, look, if you're going to lose, I'd rather lose like that, because there's no long-term physical damage I have to worry about. I just got choked out. So where does Gaethje go from here?
You know, I left Gaethje pound for pound the same spot I had him. You know, I didn't move him. And I think, I personally think Gaethje should be fighting for the title again next. I think he is the best lightweight in the world currently. It's up for grabs, right? But I think based on his win over Tony Ferguson, that he proved since Habib has retired that he is now the best 155-pounder in the world. So I think he should be involved in the fight. But my sense is, since they have a fight for Conor McGregor already made with Dustin Poirier, that's going to be the fight. Dana White was noncommittal, but I think that's the fight they're going to go with, Jim. I think they're going to say Conor versus Dustin for the championship. You know, Gaethje's now going to be left, you know, either to fight, you know, a rematch with Ferguson, and I don't know that that makes a heck of a lot of sense. You know, maybe Michael Chandler would be a guy in there, or Charles Oliveira. I think that's where. But I think the fair thing, to be honest with you, would be to put Gaethje back in the title fight, because I think he is the best lightweight in the world. He just happened to lose to the best lightweight of all time.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. So, Kevin, obviously, Conor and Poirier is a great matchup. We've seen that before. Any idea where Conor is at mentally right now?
You know, boy, he just, I mean, he seems to be all over the map. You know, he retired, and his team was saying, yes, he's retired. And all of us knew that he was not retired. That was ridiculous. And, you know, the fact that he, you know, he had the incident that he did in France where, you know, where he got arrested, that tells me that he's still not understanding the gravity of some of this information. You know, we don't know if he's guilty of a crime. He hasn't been convicted of anything yet. But put yourself in these situations I don't like. And I'd love to get back to that Conor that we saw in 2013 and 14, when he was laser focused, like Habib has been his entire career, on getting better and becoming the UFC champion, and Conor wasn't getting in trouble outside the cage, and he was a huge draw, and he was getting better each fight. I think that's the Conor I like to see get back, but I wonder if we're ever going to see that Conor now. You know, he has the money to do what he wants. You know, made $100 million against Mayweather, made a lot of money in other fights. His whiskey business is doing well. He doesn't need to fight, so as a result, he doesn't live the life of a fighter like these other guys do.
Exactly. That Gaethje, I think, still lives that life. I think you have to have that Spartan mentality. And, you know, Conor was not that far removed from coming up as a plumber's apprentice, and he wanted it, and he paid the price, and he was hungry.
Right.
But as you point out, and Dana White has pointed out repeatedly, things change when you got $100 million in the bank. Hey, Kevin, one last thought. You and I tweeted about this briefly afterwards, but how did Robert Whittaker look to you on Saturday?
God, Robert Whittaker is so freaking good. And I mean, it's a shame that Adesanya, you know, Adesanya is so good, right? And so he overshadows Whittaker. But I think Robert Whittaker, you look at his body of work and you drop that Adesanya fight out, because I think with Adesanya, we're looking at another transcendent champion in the UFC. If you skip that one fight, look at these wonderful wins that he's had. You know, Yoel Romero, and I mean, all of these victories that he's had against guys that not a lot of people were excited to fight. I thought he fought really well, better than he did in his win over Darren Till a couple months earlier. I thought he looked in complete control of this fight. He understood what Cannonier was going to do, and he had that combination that he threw a number of times. You know, the right hand and then the kick. Landed several times and finally was what really won the fight for him. I think Robert Whittaker is a fantastic, fantastic fighter. And I'll tell you what, even though I would favor Adesanya in the rematch, you cannot rule out Whittaker figuring out a way and overcoming, you know, the gap that was between them in a rematch if and when it happens.
Agreed. Like, I can't pick against Izzy. I just can't. But I couldn't have been more impressed with Whittaker. And then a final thought, Kevin, like you point out, you can't get too close to these guys. Whittaker, man, he is such a good dude, isn't he?
He is. I mean, he's a family man, and he's a guy that respects other fighters, and he comes, you know, one of his weaknesses has been he pushes his body so hard that he drains himself, and he overtrains. So this guy is all in on this sport, and he's a good man to boot. So yeah, he's a guy that, you know, he's an easy guy to root for.
As mentioned, he is the first sports writer to be honored as Outstanding Journalist by the Nevada Press Association. He covers boxing and MMA both for Yahoo Sports, and is a good friend of ours, Kevin Ioli, my guest. Kevin, always good to have you on the show. Thank you so much for doing that.
Appreciate it, Jim. See you soon.
Kevin Ioli. It's a good conversation. Habib was amazing. And I tend to agree, like, whenever you see an MMAer or a boxer say that they're retiring, you know, even sometimes they may mean it and then they come back. Most of the time they do not mean it and they come back. I think that we have probably seen the last of Habib. I mean, there was a time when getting to 30-0 and fighting GSP to do it was pretty important to him and his dad, but his dad is no longer here. And he said after that fight, look, I can't do this without my dad. I can't do this without my father. I don't want to. My mother asked me not to. I said to her, I need one more fight. I just need to do this fight. I don't think he's coming back. I think that's the last we've seen of him as a fighter. And then to come back for GSP. Nothing but respect for GSP, one of the best to ever do it, one of the GOATs. He's in that conversation. But at this point in time and at that age, what would a win over GSP really prove for Habib? You know, for who? For what? He doesn't need it. I think we have seen the last of him. And if so, that's an amazing way to go out. And again, not only that, not only was he dealing with the hardship of losing his father, who was his best friend and his coach and his mentor, but in the camp leading up to that, he had a busted foot or a toe, and he had mumps, and there was a staph infection and bronchitis in the camp. It tells you just how tough this guy is, how focused this guy is, that he trained through all of that and not only made it to the fight, but showed up and may have had his best performance ever. That's why I tweeted after the fight. I'm not sure I've ever seen a guy dominate his sport the way he dominated his sport, because that's a sport where nobody comes out unscathed. Everybody loses. Everybody gets beaten except that guy. All right, we will come right back. Still to come, Joe Moglia. And I want to talk about the World Series. Dodgers now one game away. And we can talk about Game 4, then Game 5. All of that is still ahead. Call me right now, 1-800-636-8686. All right, so a quick question for you in the meantime. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so good? There is something to be said for a family business that stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. Do not be tricked by other brands. All beef jerky is not one and the same. It's not. Make sure you choose Old Trapper, where you can actually see the quality right through their iconic Clearview packages. Every single bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they use only the very best ingredients, from their lean strips of beef seasoned with top quality spices to real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And Old Trapper jerky comes in four mouth-watering flavors. There's Old Fashioned, there is Teriyaki, there's peppered, and for those of you who need a little more zing, there's hot and spicy. all chock full of good protein to satisfy your manliest hunger cravings and provide real sustained energy. Old Trapper is just a better way to snack. If you do not see it, ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Sunday, the NFL on CBS is featuring a matchup of two elite teams fighting for division supremacy. Pittsburgh taking on Baltimore. Love that game. Also, a key AFC Eastern showdown between the Bills and Patriots. Love that game. Join JB and the guys and me. Yeah, I got my assignment. Drew Kalisky, like clockwork. The most consistent human being on the planet Earth, Drew Kalisky, sent me my assignment early this morning like he always does the week of that show where I appear. The NFL Today starting at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, Sunday. The NFL is on CBS. I've already got my topics. Now, it's only Monday. They can't change. But I'm fired up. I will be making an appearance on the NFL on CBS with my Views from Rome segment. So make sure you lock that in. Sunday morning, 12 noon Eastern and 9 Pacific. Another good schedule and slate of games. All right, so we're open right now. 1-800-636-8686. This guy writes, this is Chris. Hey, Dodger Jim. I have just one question. How was your weekend? Were you gripping? Were you tripping? Is all the furniture in your house okay? Damn, I can't even imagine having to suffer through two nail biters like that one if they were my team. He's talking about me, the homer, Dodger Jim. Yeah, Dodger Jim is fine. Dodger Jim is not nearly as invested in the outcome of those games as you think that he is. Dodger Jim is not the homer that you think that he is. Now, when I was a kid, I lived and died with them. Then I was Dodger Jim. Or more like Dodger Jimmy when I was like 11. Drew in West LA tweets, how was your sports weekend with Rake Jome? Now, the reason he knows that is not... okay, either he knows that because I mentioned it earlier or he went to my Instagram feed where I had a picture of Jake. You should be doing that now. You should follow me on Instagram. I might surprise you with pictures of the fam. I generally do not do that, and I pick my spots very carefully. But there was a TBT picture of Janet and I at the Breeders' Cup, and I even put up a picture of Jake Rome. Jake Rome surprised me by coming home for the weekend. He goes to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So in terms of how was the sports weekend with Jake, you know, again, to reiterate, Jake's not a big sports kid. Like, not like I was growing up. And even as he and Logan were growing up, I was not forcing them into it. I was not making them watch games or taking them. We had season tickets to the Angels for a few years, but I wasn't making them partake. I was going to let them find their own way, find their own path. So both kids play baseball. Jake played baseball until his senior year of high school. Logan's a sophomore in high school and still plays. And that's the extent of it. Like, the world's very different, right? When I was growing up, there was sports and there was nothing else. These kids have their attention being pulled or focused in a lot of different ways. However, and I have told the story before, Jake Rome got it in his head. Like, he did well enough in high school that he didn't get into all of his top choices, but he got into a lot of different schools. And he had different opportunities. But he had it in his head that he wanted to go to NYU. Like, Jake had been to the big city after having never been to a big city. And he's like, oh, hell yeah. I'm going to New York. I'm going to NYU. I said, hey, Junior, here's how it is. I'm paying for it. I'm not going to tell you where you have to go. And I'm not going to tell you where you can't go. We can make this decision as a family, but I'm going to strongly, strongly urge you not to go to NYU. Not because NYU is not amazing, because it is, but I think that you should get yourself a college experience. He's like, no, but the city, Dad. Hey, Pop, the city, it's amazing. I'm like, yo, it's amazing. Manhattan and New York City is absolutely incredible, but it's always going to be there. You have your entire life to work and live in the city. College is a one-off now. and this is before COVID, I said, this is a very different opportunity for you. So at least before you decide that you're going to NYU, let's go look at a couple of really cool college towns with college experiences. All right, where? I would recommend Wisconsin. Everybody I've ever known that went to Wisconsin said it was the greatest thing ever. And that Badger Mafia is unlike anything I've ever seen. So go to Madison, look at the school, see how it feels. If it's not for you, we keep moving. He and Janet go to Madison. They fall in love, love at first sight. That's where he wants to be. That's where he ends up. So to answer the question, how was my sports weekend? Now, Jake's all about Wisconsin football. When Jake was never about football, except for the one time where he asked me, hey, Dad, can I play football? And I said, no. And that was the end of that. So to answer the question, if you look at my Instagram feed, go there, at Jim Rome. Go there and follow if you don't mind. There's a picture of the kid checking out the football game. He and I took it to the outdoor lounge in the backyard, put the game up. So we had a good sports weekend. Wisconsin was dominant, not only in avenging that defeat to Illinois last year, but dominant. Looked amazing doing it. So we had a very good sports weekend, Jake and I, and the whole fam, in fact. Tommy from NC tweets, apologies for the win, Jim. Signed, Ian Poulter. Hey, idiot. Like, Graham Mertz is unbelievable. He lived up to all the hype. When nothing ever does, in Madison, when they got him, that was a tremendous pull for the program. And when almost nothing lives up to the hype, he smashed it Friday night. As far as idiots like Tommy tweeting apologies for the wind, Jim, Ian Poulter. Yeah, I don't know, dude. Fire to me and people losing their homes and their lives, just isn't that funny. Equating that with flatulence, Tom, is just not that funny. I'm talking to you too, Hawk. You two dopes. Orange County is ablaze right now, and the winds are insane. The wind is blowing hard. So I'm keeping my eye on that. Nathan Gross tweets, speaking of a mafia, the Spills Mafia, or the Bills Mafia, are skating on really thin ice. Dude, they worked awfully hard to put the Jets away, didn't they? That'll happen when you attempt 8 field goals. You might want to finish some of those drives. That might have been good enough against the Jets. That's not going to be good enough against the Pats, no matter how bad the Pats looked yesterday, and they look like crap. So Buffalo's going to have to do better, for sure. All right, let's break. When we come back, let's talk World Series. We're talking Dodger baseball next. What an insane weekend for the Dodgers, the Dodger fans. And notice I didn't say Dodger Jim. I said for the Dodgers and Dodger fans. Looking ahead to the Wednesday podcast, I thought of it as I saw Ritz stand up to stretch it out. Just stretch that out, old man. Edgerrin James is our guest on the podcast on Wednesday. Looking forward to catching up and chopping it up with Edge. That's going to be a good one. Jim Rome podcast every Wednesday after the program. Let's take a short time out. We're talking World Series. When we come back and phone lines are open, time for a sports update. Here is your bottom of the hour update. Ball beef jerky is not the same. Old Trapper is better for you and higher in essential protein than chips, sugar-filled energy bars, or candy. Make sure you ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper. What is your beef? My beef, and normally the beefs don't come until Wednesday. Wednesday is our beef day. My beef is I can't find one of you to make this thing better on the phones. Well, I'm getting a lot of calls, just not calls to make it better. That's why you're not hearing them. When somebody steps up, we can make it better on the phones. I'm putting you right to the front of the line. Man, cut the line. Get your golden ticket. Do it. There's going to be a smack-off in 2020, 2021. 2020 is the weirdest year ever. But 2021's got to be better, and there will be a smack-off, just like there has been every single year for the past quarter century plus. But you can't be in it unless you earn your way in. 1-800-636-8686. Rams, Bears, tonight, who you got? Man, both those teams. I've been burned by both those. I have had very differing entertainment experiences with both those teams. So who you got tonight? I'm looking at a number that has the Rams minus six. Who you got? Who do you like tonight? Speaking of Dodger Jim, what an insane weekend for the Dodgers and Dodger fans. Like, you had Walker Buehler spin that gem on Friday night. That gave the Dodgers a 2-1 series lead. And Dodger fan felt great then. Then the Dodgers had the lead in the ninth on Saturday night. They were just a strike away from putting a chokehold on the Rays and that series. A single strike away from getting both their hands around their throat. And then this happened.
Jansen. That is into center field. Here comes Kiermaier. Phillips has tied the game. A Rose Arena coming around. Throw home. Now he stumbles. But the ball gets away. Tampa Bay wins it. Brett Phillips, game four hero.
I mean, more than a day and a half later, and that play is still completely insane to me. Brett Phillips was so clutch. The entire Rays team is so clutch. And you know, Dodger fan had to be losing his mind. A single strike away from a 3-1 series lead. One strike away from being a game away from a championship. And then all hell breaks loose. A single pitch. After that, Dodger fan had to be tripping so hard. They had to be seeing ghosts. The ultimate, oh hell no. Here we go again. And instead of Clayton Kershaw taking the bump in Game 5 with a chance to clinch the World Series, he's out there taking the mound to stop the bleeding, reverse the momentum, and get LA right again. And here's the awful truth, right? If Kershaw does not show up huge last night, nobody's going to remember Kenley Jansen's ninth inning in Game 4. Nobody's going to remember Chris Taylor's bobble in the outfield. Nobody's going to remember Will Smith missing that throw at home and having the ball squirt loose on that swipe tag. Now, no one's going to give a damn about that or remember that. It's going to be all about Kershaw and Dave Roberts and how it's all their fault. And it would have been completely unfair. But you know that it would have been all on both of them. You know it would be, because it always is. No matter how jacked the narrative is about Kershaw and Roberts coming up short in the postseason. Never mind that I would love to know the dynamic between Dave Roberts and the front office. I mean, just being real for a second, right? How many of those decisions are actually his decisions? And it's not even a Dodger thing. It's a baseball thing right now. I mean, don't the Yankees have one of their analytics nerds actually in the dugout with them? How many of that actually is on Dave Roberts? Either way, you know that narrative. And if they were going to go down, especially if they were one strike away from going up 3-1, you know the heat was going to come down on those two guys, Kershaw and Roberts, and that they were going to take the fall if there was another Dodgers implosion, regardless of how much of it was actually their fault. So, Dodger fan was gripping. Not Dodger Jim, but Dodger fan. How were the Dodgers going to respond to that kick in the balls? That gutting loss to come that close and lose it on a two-out, two-strike hit to a defensive replacement who was known more for his laugh than his bat. Man, how do you come back from that? Here's how. The Dodgers respond with Mookie Betts, starting off Game 5 with an 8-pitch at-bat that ended with a double, and then with this.
That is a base hit into right. Here comes Betts. Here's the throw. Dodgers take first inning lead. What a start.
Man, that's how you respond. That's how you respond to getting tased in Game 4. You come back in Game 5, and you immediately jump out to a lead. I mean, I can't say enough about Corey Seager and what he's done in the postseason. Man, this guy's so good. He is doing everything at such an elite level. I mean, everything. Running the bases, taking second and third on wild pitches. And Cody Bellinger? Bellinger ain't bad either.
There goes Muncy on a ground ball. Nice play, Lau. No play for an out, and it's 2-0 Dodgers.
2-0 Dodgers. And Kershaw has not even taken the ball yet. He only faced three batters in the first inning, and then Jock Peterson. Jock goes jock like he always does in the postseason. Man, my man loves postseason baseball.
That is well hit into left center field. Back at the wall. It is 3-0 Dodgers. Peterson with a blast.
They don't want that smoke.
They don't want that smoke. Jeez. 3-0 Dodgers, thanks to Fox. Again, that's a hell of a response from the Dodgers. I know a Dodger fan was expecting the worst. I mean, you got a hell of a lot of scar tissue that you need to work through. But the players were handling it a lot better than the fans were. But you know the Rays. You know they're not going away. Man, they fight. They battle for everything. They don't go away. I've tried to tell you time and time again, they're tough. They don't blink. They don't flinch. Most of all, they just don't give a damn. They don't. They're not comfortable until they're uncomfortable. And sure enough, they come right back. They get two of their own in the third. They make it 3-2. And then in the fourth, Manny Margot, who was on third. This was an amazing moment, I thought. This guy damn near went legend.
Here's the runner coming to the plate and tagged out. And the inning is Margot. He's saying he got around the tag. Austin Barnes, the catcher, immediately heads off. He thinks he got him. With his big set move, Kershaw stepped off so he didn't balk. And that's close, but no review. So the Rays had first and third, nobody out, and do not score. What a job by Kershaw, and it's still 3-2 Dodgers.
Listen, now hyperbole aside, that is one of the most awesome things I've ever seen. I'm watching that, and I literally out loud said, are you effing kidding me? Did they really just try to steal home in a World Series game? And damn near pull it off. I mean, that was amazing. That was absolutely the best. I don't even care, seam heads, if you're going to come in here with this. I don't even care that they tried that with two outs. I don't even care that he made that decision himself. I don't even care that they took the bat out of the hands of a really clutch hitter in Kevin Kiermaier. Man, I love that moment. And I'm Dodger Jim. And I didn't love it because they got him. I just thought that was the brassest thing I'd ever seen. Man, that was so cool. That was so brash. It was awesome. And he damn near did pull it off. Inches from nearly changing the game and the entire series. I mean, how aggressive is that bleep? They tried to steal home in a World Series game. I mean, to me, one of the ultimate holy crap moments. Again, literally from my couch, I jumped up. Are you bleeping kidding me with that? It was incredible. Can you imagine what that would have done to the Dodgers to lose game four the way they did and then to see game five tied up with a steal of home? And even better, he did make that call himself. As he said after the game through an interpreter, quote, it was 100% my decision. I thought it was a good idea at the time. I had a pretty good chance of being safe. End quote. Hell yes.
Hell yeah.
That's my guy right there. That is so great. I mean, it wasn't a good idea at the time. It was an awesome idea at the time. And he had a great chance of being safe. You get to third with nobody out, and he's still standing there with two men out. Time to make something happen. Time to try to make history. And if it were not for perfect execution by a vet who kept his head, it would have worked. Speaking of a vet keeping his head. Speaking of giving out some respect. Now would be a pretty good time to stop giving Clayton Kershaw crap for how he pitches in the postseason. Let me give you some numbers. 4-1, 2.93 ERA, 37 strikeouts, 5 walks this postseason. So that's not just good for this postseason. That's good for any postseason. And you could tell by how pissed the Dodger fans were when Dave Roberts came to get him, how well he was pitching. Yeah, maybe he didn't have his best stuff, but but was out there grinding and dealing. Check what he did in that fourth inning. He walked Margot. Margot steals second, gets to third on an error. Then he walks Hunter Renfroe. First and third, nobody out. The tying run is 90 feet from home. Most guys who, quote, can't handle the pressure of the postseason, most guys who are that guy, if you think they are going to take a big dump in their pants.
You have a big dump in your pants.
It's not what he did. He went to work, started to hit one spot after another, got a pop-up, then a three-pitch strikeout, then he flipped that inning so quickly it made Margot feel like he had to make something happen, which led to a third out. Tough as hell. Again, Kershaw would be the first one to tell you that he might not have what he used to have in that arm. Even if he doesn't admit it, he knows it. Hell, last night, he might not have even had what he had earlier this season. But that was some bulldog competitive stuff on the hill last night. Found a way to get it done. Dave Roberts had this to say about the big dude.
You know, he just grinded. He willed himself to that point. And I will say it wasn't his best stuff, but he found a way to get out. And I give him all the credit.
Hey, Doc. I see you, Doc. Dave Roberts is going to get the last laugh in all this. He just is. And Kershaw deserves all the credit. Get outs. It's the name of the game, man. Get outs. Get outs. Lead with a lead. And this was one of the times when the bullpen actually did back him up, and they kept that lead. If the Dodgers do not win the World Series, if the Rays come back, it's not on Kershaw. He did his job, and then some. He started them off with a series lead, then he came back, and he rescued them when they needed it most. It was brass as hell. That's what your franchise pitcher does in the postseason. He starts you off when you need it. He sets you right when you need that too. And right now, because of him, the Dodgers are a win away from a ring. One freaking win away from a title. Not only did he not cost them a ring last night, he may have won them a ring last night. And then changed a narrative. It was all jacked up with to begin with.
They don't want that smoke!
They don't want that smoke. Stay with it. Hour number three coming up next.